Good afternoon and welcome to another episode of And Then There's That, a bi-weekly podcast of people, politics, and punditry in Howard County on the HOCO Mojo Network. I'm Paul Scalney, and I'm here at Clyde's and Columbia Town Center Lakefront with my co-host, Dennis Lane. Joining us today is Michael Oberman, a photographer, and so much more. But as always, we'd first like to take a look at some of the news making the headlines this week. Dennis?
Yes, Paul?
What you got?
We have a theme.
We do. We talked about that.
We have a theme this week, and it's...
Monkeys.
Weird politics.
And wacky neighbors.
And wacky neighbors. So, should we start with the monkeys?
Why don't we do that?
Monkeys. Friskies. Friskies Wildlife Preserve.
Frisky monkeys.
Frisky monkeys. Now, for those of you who don't know about Friskies, Friskies is a wildlife sanctuary out in Woodstock, I believe. And 11 years ago, this thing started, where some neighbors, actually, I had the names of the folks here. Where are they? The Tuttles.
Colleen Layton.
Colleen Layton and Julianne Tuttle. Oh, no, Richard Wyckoff and Julianne Tuttle. They're the neighbors. They've complained about Friskies Wildlife Preserve, saying that the monkeys pose a risk for humans and have tried to shut down the sanctuary.
And I guess we should say that the sanctuary, they care, and Colleen Layton and other volunteers that work at this sanctuary, they care for some 200 injured animals at any given time, including birds and rabbits and goats and monkeys.
Right. It's been operating as a charitable and philanthropic institution, but it hasn't had the required zoning exception, and that's where the problem has come.
So these two neighbors, the Wyckoffs and the Tuttles, they've been fighting the sanctuary now for 11 years.
11 years.
It's got to be a land use issue if it's 11 years old in Howard County.
I mean, 11 years, and they're saying that these monkeys are dangerous and they're full of disease, but in 11 years, nothing's happened.
Well, and the Board of Appeals, I guess, ruled in their favor, in the favor of the neighbors, and it went all the way up to the Court of Appeals, the highest court in Maryland, came all the way back down, and now it's coming back before the Board of Appeals on August the 5th. With a directive from the Court of Appeals to relook at the case.
Yep, do it all over again.
Yep.
So they'll start again.
Do-over.
August is a do-over. So anyway, monkeys are in the news in Howard County this week.
Well, can I throw this in on that? Yeah. I really think the Wyckoffs and the Tuttles should just take the last train to Clarksville.
Can you get there from Woodstock?
Well, you know,
no
the
public
monkeys.
Transportation,
we're talking about the monkeys.
That's true, the monkeys. I forgot about that. You know, we did fail to mention, though, and people should know this, is that this wildlife preserve actually has all the permits they need, all the federal licenses and all the state licenses they need to operate, you know, to care for these kind of animals.
And, you know, Dennis, this goes also to an issue we've been talking about for the last several shows, which is sort of land rights that people have to their property.
Right.
And we've talked about silos and being able to put, you know, a cell tower, cell receiving dishes within silos, et cetera. And this is just another example of the government and neighbors who really have a loud voice, wacky neighbors, coming in and trying to take away from people their rights. And look, I get it. You don't want monkeys next door. But you know what? If the property is situated such that you're not sitting on top of another house and the monkeys are safe and there isn't disease and you've got all the permits, let's leave them alone.
I'm so tempted to say we all have monkeys living next door.
You just did.
I did.
Speaking of monkeys, let's shift to politics.
Let's shift to politics. That's a good one. Well, you want to start with the Taxpayer Protection Initiative was in the news again this week.
Well, and for those listeners that don't know, the Taxpayer Initiative is an initiative of the Republican Party this year to require to institute a charter amendment to the Howard County Charter, which would require a 4-vote county council majority to authorize any general tax increases. And they've really been running with this. I think some of the Democrats and opponents have suggested that it's nothing more than an election year politics. But they need to come up with, some 10,000 signatures by, I guess, August 9th deadline.
By August 9th deadline.
And they're, as of last week, they were 3,000. They got a lot of work to do.
They got a lot of work to do. And, you know, it's kind of like this election year. We've made jokes about old politicians being trotted out to run again, you know, with Ehrlich and Dennis Schrader and some other ones that we've seen before. Well, this initiative was also tried once again. 6 years ago, the Republicans in the county tried to do it again. They tried to have the same kind of initiative, and it failed. So, you know, I get. But the my favorite one was this guy Ken Aldrich, who's leading this this effort, was quoted in the Baltimore Sun as saying, "People are still fat, dumb, and happy. They're couch potatoes," he said with disgust.
He's frustrated because people aren't energized. And I think they tried to get volunteers to come out, and they couldn't get volunteers to come out.
Right.
And they're blaming it on the fact that they don't have enough volunteers and it's been hot out. You know what? If something's important, you're going to get the people
out
there.
You're going to get the people. They say the voters are outraged. Well, if they're outraged, you would have the people helping you out.
You know, what's interesting is two names that I think a lot of listeners would know are former executive Chuck Ecker.
And Charlie Figge,
uh-huh. who was a candidate for county executive and served on the county council for some period of time, both have come out opposed to this charter amendment, suggesting that while they're not in favor of taxes, they think that sometimes taxes are appropriate and we should leave the system alone and allow taxes to be passed if that's what needs to happen.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny because Alan Kittleman, who's the Senate minority leader for the Republican Party, in the state, he was quoted in the same article saying, the people will sign it if we ask them. Well, Charlie Figge won't sign it, neither will Chuck Ecker. Those are two pretty staunch Republicans in the county. So,
friendly guys.
Yeah, friendly guys. But now back to weird neighbors. Or was it weird neighbors or wacky neighbors? Wacky neighbors. Wacky neighbors, you know, when I get to this next story, I think of the saying that, you know, insanity is doing the same thing over and over again, expecting different results. It's like asking for a grocery store at Wild Lake.
You ain't getting one. Move on.
It's not going to happen. You didn't hear it here first, but you heard it again. Because Kimco came back. Now they've scaled their plan down. They're no longer asking for 500 apartments at Wild Lake. They've come back with 200 apartments, a drugstore. They're going to get the gas station out of there, which is kind of interesting. That was Columbia's first gas station, by the way. And
what were you driving back then?
A bicycle. So, you know, I would like to see this happen, but it's going to be another 2 years. And for people in Wild Lake, you know, this is the process that you wanted. You wanted a new development process with lots of community input. It takes time.
Well, and I think it's important. You know, Kimco came out and said, we think this is a balancing act of what we can do, feasibly what the market will let us do, and what we've heard from you about what you think is important as a community. And I think sometimes communities forget that they know everything about what they want, but they forget about the business side of it.
Yeah.
You know, Kimco owns this thing, and they need to do what's going to work economically. You can't just put something in there that people want without some consideration of the economics.
It's really not just putting something in there. I mean, you're going out and you're trying to attract somebody to pay you rent. To locate there. I mean, there's a merchant that has to say, well, if I'm going to pay this rent, I got to believe I'm going to make money in that location. And that's always a tough sell. I mean, Wild Lake is kind of off the beaten path. And, you know, it's going to take some good merchants that are willing to take kind of a fly on locating there. So
moving from wacky neighbors in one community to another. So, you know, the county council is considering allowing wineries. And actually, I think that they were supposed to consider this last night, and I'm not sure if there was an...
There might have been a vote on
that. A vote on that last night. I'm not sure what happened there. But, you know, it's funny how people are coming out against allowing wineries to exist in Howard County, and this was actually legislation that was introduced at the request of our county executive, Ken Allman. And there were really two classes of wineries based on their size. And I just think it's funny because one of the complaints was that they're concerned this is going to cause traffic jams and put drunk drivers on rural roads. Well, you know what? First of all,
there's no drunk drivers on rural roads now.
Most people that I know that go to wineries, they go for wine tasting. They don't go to do, you know, shots and
knock back a bottle.
There are so many accidents in the Napa Valley, let me tell you.
All the time.
All the time. But, I mean, not all are related to the wineries.
Right.
Well, and it's unfortunate, but, you know, I think it's more dangerous to have kids driving out there, you know, following a football game. We had the tragedy back last year after the River Hill lost a football game, and they lost one of their students. I think it was a graduate, actually. And, you know, the drunk drivers all over the place. But I don't think this is going to cause drunk drivers, and I sure don't think this is going to cause traffic jams in the rural part of the county when you've got 20 people
for
10
acres.
You know, coming out there. So if you have a 200-acre parcel, you're going to end up with 200 people. You figure, you know, 80 cars maybe, something like that.
Maybe. And not all there at once. I mean,
they're not all lining up.
No, again, you know, it's funny. Whenever somebody wants to be against something, they'll say, well, it's, you know, danger to public health. I just don't see a wine tasting as a danger to public health. Actually, it's better for the people with heart disease. Go ahead.
I was going to say, there was one more piece on the politics side, and actually this was kind of interesting, and I actually picked this up off of Hoko Rising. And it's kind of interesting. Apparently, the Republican...
Hooker Rising, you're talking about the blog.
The blog, yeah. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
So apparently, the Republican Party nationally is not supporting the local Maryland GOP.
Not like the Dems. Dems got $100,000.
The Dems got $100,000 from it. And it's also interesting because apparently Ben Cardin back in 07,
yeah, 2007,
when now candidate Dennis Schrader, who's running against Jen Tarasa for county council, Senator Ben Cardin supported Dennis Schrader for that position.
Because he was up for a FEMA appointment.
Because he was up for a FEMA appointment. Uh-huh. Yet at the same time here, now we don't have the Republican Party supporting these very candidates that are now running. And, you know, this is supposed to be a Republican year. This is the year.
Right.
Back since 94, I think, was the last time that we had an opportunity as Republicans to actually move things forward. And it's just strange that the support's really not there at a national level.
Yeah, the Dems are getting $100,000 from their national party. That's pretty nice.
Which, as politics go today, doesn't get you very far in advertising. But, it's something.
Yeah. I wanted to mention, you know, our guest on the last show was Kate Hetherington, the president of HCC, and she was in the news this week because Howard Community College was one of the three schools, were among 97 recognized as great colleges to work for from the Chronicle of Higher Education. Kudos to Kate. And this is the second time in as many years that HCC has made that list. So it's, that really is testament to a good administration. To be recognized as a great place to work, because it's one thing to be a great place to learn, but
were they number two as well, or doing
but they're part of the number two because we're all number two in Howard County. But
yeah, Kate's number one in my book.
You got anything else? I got this thing on the hiring binge that CA has been.
Sure,
on.
Run with that.
Well, as much as CA has been, or not CA in particular, but CA's board, their dysfunctional board. Has kind of, really been at odds with GGP over the Town Center Redevelopment Plan, and to the point where they're actually kind of gone their own way with a plan for Symphony Woods. At the same time, they hire a community planner who's quoted in the Columbia Flyer as saying that, everything that happens in a space is what community planning is about, and she says that's just not a matter of architecture of a particular building or the engineering of a roadway or walkway. It's how all the pieces, roads, parks, paths, and open space and development are coordinated in a way to advance the public interest.
You mean like all the rest of the pieces around here the GGP owns?
Yeah.
Got it.
Like you think that maybe she'll finally talk CA into working with the largest property owner in Town Center in order to get something done for the better of us all?
That would be nice.
And that brings me up to the other guy they hired. You know, I think it was GGP that also was the first one I knew of that raised the... I'm going to take a minute here. You know who's just walking up here right now to our show is a man who you just spoke about for a moment. This is Tom Cole, who writes the blog Hoko Rising. Hopefully we can talk him into sticking around, and we can ask him a question about what he put up on the blog later. But
how about grabbing us a couple beers?
But we'll come back to that.
We'll come back to that. Time to move on to our guests.
All right, so joining us today is Michael Oberman. I'm not really even sure where to start in introducing Michael. He is a world-class photographer, and he has not limited his photography to one area. He's done everything from rock and roll bands to now wildlife and photography, and most appropriate since he lives in Wild Lake, right?
I actually don't live in Wild Lake, but I utilize Wild Lake quite a bit.
It's sort of your home away from home.
Correct.
So. That's your canvas.
So to speak. Yeah.
Yeah. Michael, you have your photos have been recognized nationally, and you've got a couple books, correct?
Well, my photos are in a number of books. I don't have my own books out.
And we have them living in Wild Lake. We have them as an author.
But our research was really good for this show.
But three of my photos of Columbia Wildlife are in U.S. national parks, and it's strange that they would use Columbia Wildlife for a kiosk overlooking the Columbia River Gorge out west. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. Yeah.
But of course, it wasn't just wildlife that you have photographed. You've written about wildlife in the early rock and roll days.
I lived the wildlife. Yes,
you did as a columnist for the Star.
Correct.
And who were some of the acts you covered back then?
Well, it wasn't so much covering as I had a weekly interview column. So I interviewed 300 artists over 6 years.
Wow.
And that included Jimi Hendrix, Janis Joplin, The Doors, The Stones, David Bowie, Otis Redding, James Brown, etc. Just pretty much a panoply of artists that were hot from 1967 to 73 when I wrote.
Which one of those really stuck out in your mind as one of the more interesting?
Well, there are a couple things. I got very little wordage out of Van Morrison.
Really?
And a couple years after...
Singer-songwriter.
A couple years after
I... What's wrong with this picture?
After I interviewed him, I was working for Warner Brothers Records, and I was in New York for a Van Morrison concert at Carnegie Hall. And there was an after-concert party in the home of one of the executives at Warner Brothers. And I went there, and I had been on the train... got on like a 7 a.m. train to go to New York. I'd been up for 20 hours, had a couple drinks at the party, and it was packed. And I decided Van hadn't arrived yet. I'd go upstairs to a bedroom and just chill out. So I was in this bedroom by myself. The door opens, and Kurt Vonnegut and Roman Polanski walk into the room. Two of my all-time heroes.
Love Kurt Vonnegut. Love Kurt Vonnegut.
They sit on the bed next to me, grab the remote to the TV, and turn on the Johnny Carson show. They acknowledge me with polite nods of the head, and I'm just totally awestruck. They're watching Johnny Carson because a Polish author, Jerzy Kaczynski, who was friends with both of them, was being interviewed. They got up, left. I went back to the party. Van Morrison had already been there and left. So it was basically my close encounter with Kurt Vonnegut and Roman Polanski.
Had no real conversation with
and
him.
And nothing to say to Van again.
They just kind of used your room.
Yeah. I guess the artist that stands out the most in my life is David Bowie, because he actually, his first day in the United States was spent at my mother's house in Silver Spring, Maryland,
really?
In 1971.
How did that come about?
Yeah.
Well, my brother was working with Bowie. My brother worked for Mercury Records at the time, and he brought Bowie to the United States to do a promotional tour. Bowie was very popular in England but hadn't broken in the U.S.
Yeah.
So they flew into Dulles Airport, where I went with my parents to pick him up, and it took 4 hours to get him because he was in customs, because he had worn a full-length purple gown on the plane and was undergoing a body search.
Dave, that reminds me of the one you wore that day.
Purple's a very nice color.
Went back to my parents' house. We had dinner at Emerson's Steakhouse with Bowie in Silver Spring. The waitress, we were in a booth where there were curtains. The waitress closed the curtain on us. Afterwards, we went back to my little crash pad in Tacoma Park, where one of the bands I managed, Sky Cobb, was having a bong contest.
Ah.
And
bong making, bong using.
Bong using. And bong Bowie, using, yes, Bowie right. had never seen a bong.
He'd never seen
Bowie
a bong.
Bowie had never bonged.
So you're telling me
God,
here,
I find that hard to
did
believe.
You introduce David Bowie to the bong?
He didn't accept the introduction, but it was his first introduction
we
to the
break
bong.
News on the show. He didn't accept.
No. But
if it was a bong contest, he probably did inhale because the room was probably full of it.
Well, to this day, the guys from Sky Cobb, who are spread all over the U.S., the drummer went on to become the drummer for Emmylou Harris, and he's now the major tattoo photographer in Los Angeles.
Who knew that?
They didn't say a word to Bowie. They just thought, who's this British guy with the two different eyes and the long hair?
Right, and the purple robe.
In the purple dress, yeah.
That's wild. What other stories do you have about some of the other artists? Maybe interesting things they shared with you in your interviews, other experiences that you've had?
Well, the more interesting things, you'll have to wait to read my book, Backstage Pass, which is being written as we speak.
We knew that.
We knew. He's got a book coming out. I told you.
Well, he doesn't have it yet. We just knew it was coming.
I guess interesting things.
How long have you been working on this book?
Well, if you go back to having started writing the columns in 67, a long time.
Long time, right.
So really the book is going to be a compilation of the best columns. My brother, who wrote the column before me and was the first American journalist to interview the Beatles.
Wow.
So it'll be a compilation of the best of our columns with anecdotal stories about what happened during, before, or after the interviews.
A tell-all book?
It will be a tell-all. I guess one of the stories was...
Of course, some of these people are dead now, so it doesn't...
Well, yeah, and we'll talk about a dead one. Janis Joplin.
Jimi Hendrix.
That was the big year where the people, rock stars with the letter J in their name died. Jimi Hendrix, Janis Joplin, Jim Morrison, Brian Jones, etc. Janis Joplin was headlining the Alexandria Roller Rink, with the opening act being the Jeff Beck Group with Rod Stewart and Ron Wood in the group.
Oh, yeah. I remember the Jeff Beck Group.
Well, I interviewed Rod and Jeff Beck at the rink and then got invited to go back to Janis's hotel room in her limo with her to do the interview with her. And
Is that what you call it? Interview.
It was more or less an interview.
This was after the show.
This is after the show.
So Janis had knocked back a little Southern Comfort by this point.
She was knocking it back in the limo. She was knocking it back in her room. And at one point, I know this is maybe PG rated, but at one point, one of her breasts came out of her top while I was interviewing her in the room. And there were two things that Kate kept me from having sex with Janis Joplin. Okay?
Keep going.
She was one of them.
Well, that was the main one. You called it. It was...
You want a what?
Absolutely no attraction.
You know, Paul, I think we're going to have a disclaimer at the beginning of the show. Attended for mature audiences only.
No attraction.
We'll lose half our listeners.
Physically at all. And then journalistic ethics.
Yeah, journalistic, yeah, right. And that was it.
After I left the Star, she was dead, and I couldn't have sex with her. So.
Well, then there's that.
Michael, at some point you...
Bring us back, Paul.
I'm reeling it in.
We're way out there.
At some point, you kind of shifted from being a music critic to being a photographer within the music industry.
Well,
talk about a little bit about that transition.
That's a bit of a misnomer. I took some photos.
That's three for three.
In the music industry, I used my camera, but I went to work for Warner Electric Atlantic Corporation. They had formed the first major distribution company, cutting out independent distribution in the music business. I went to work for them, and occasionally I used my camera when I was working for them, and I did a couple of album covers in my day.
Really? For who?
Mostly for groups I managed and hired photographers who did lousy jobs.
Ah, okay. Mm-hmm. So you took the bullet by the horns and did it yourself?
Yeah, did it myself. One that sticks out is the Roslyn Mountain Boys, who were very popular in the Washington, D.C. area, and the album cover is one of my all-time favorites. And but I went on to manage artists and managed three artists who managed to get signed to major labels and became part of the 90% of artists who get signed to major labels who lose money.
Hmm.
That's the way the business works.
Really, 90%?
90%. Wow. It's the Bruce Springsteens and Michael Jacksons and Stings who make enough money for a label to support the 9 out of 10 acts they sign that lose money.
Wow. You know, while we're on that, before we kind of move to some other things, I mean... You know, you talked about Janis Joplin, you talked about Jimi Hendrix and the Doors. All these groups played Meriwether at one time, too.
Most of them did, yeah. Some of my interviews, I interviewed The Who at Meriwether.
I was at that show.
That was, I don't know if you remember, that Pete Townsend picked up a mic stand and hit an audience member in the mouth with it when he jumped up on stage.
I don't recall that.
The bong contest.
It's because you were the person and he knocked you out.
What I recall about that was the first time Meriwether was truly overwhelmed. There were like 20,000 people.
Right. They oversold Meriwether.
Yeah, they oversold. As a matter of fact, I think eventually they just opened the gates.
They were forced to open the gates.
Yeah, forced to open the gates because so many people showed up. How do you feel about Meriwether today? I mean, are you...
Well, I'm so happy that Seth Hurwitz and IMP Productions took it over because... When I first moved to Columbia, it really there was a dearth of acts playing Meriwether, and Seth has really brought that venue back.
And actually, you've been quoted in the Baltimore Sun as saying that Columbia is kind of a dearth.
Well, I think the direct quote was, "It's the most moribund place
moribund.
I've ever lived."
Moribund,
and it was the first time I've had the opportunity to use the word moribund. Probably ever.
Yeah, that's a good one. You know, I try to keep it in my pocket for the right moment, but I've never had a chance to pull it out.
Well, you know, it's funny how many people approached me after that, both positively and negatively. I would say positive 70%, negative 30%, including I'm sitting on a bench with my camera gear at Wild Lake, and two elderly women who I'd seen many times came up to me and said, "Why don't you move?" And I thought they wanted me to get up off the bench and let them sit down. So I got up, and one of them said, "No, we mean out of Colombia."
Oh, my God. Well, you know, then there's that. You know, some people like it just the way it is, and they don't want to see that change. So.
Well, the fact is, I love Colombia, and I think a lot of people never get to the jump page of a story. They read the front page, and they never go to the jump page. I said, I don't want to see Colombia become another Bethesda.
Right.
But I'm tired of going to D.C. and Baltimore to see a first-run foreign film. I'm tired of seeing the same chain restaurants open.
Right.
And, you know, while the Melting Pot isn't a huge chain, to see the Melting Pot be the keystone of Wild Lake Village Center, when really it's a destination restaurant for people having parties and anniversaries, it's not like a neighborhood restaurant, which I long to see. We're sitting here at this beautiful lake. And other than the summer when they show movies and have dancing and Clyde says their outdoor bar, there are no kiosks down here open at night. There's no more paddle boats. And one thing that really irks me, and I called CA about this, and you won't believe the response I got.
No, please.
Oh, yes, he will.
Okay. Here we go.
It'll be hard to shock me with CA.
I called CA to talk about the lakes, and one thing I said was, here you've got this dock area or boardwalk outside the restaurants, right on the lakeside of Kittamakundi, and kids run around on there, slipping on goose poop, and there is not one life ring to throw to them if they fall in the water. And my response from CA was, where are we going to get the money for life rings?
Well, you know, I think the funniest part, the lake is so full of sediment that if somebody fell in, they're not going to, they go, what, 2 feet?
Well, the problem is if you go out to where the bell tower used to be,
right,
and you fall in at that end, you're falling into about 7 feet of water.
There's about 7 feet there?
Yeah. And people do drown in 2 feet of water, too. You get a two-year-old running away from mommy down here, slipping on goose poop and falling in the water. Mommy's screaming, and she can't swim. She doesn't know the water there is 2 feet deep.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Where are they going to get the money? Well, they got the money to hire a community planner, and they got the money to hire a watershed manager. You'd think they could shell out a couple of bucks for a...
Well, they've had money to design that really good computer program over the last number of years as well. So
When's that going to be ready?
I think we're still waiting. You know, it's funny. I have a good friend of mine who went to Howard High School, and we were very good friends. Been friends for 25-plus years. And she lives in Rhode Island now. And she got an email from a fellow friend of hers that also went to Howard High, who had moved out of this community, as had she, over 10, 15 years ago. And he sent her this email and said, "Hey, I was back for 4th of July visiting my parents, or my mom, and I couldn't believe Columbia. It's dilapidated. The decking needs painting and staining. There's no people. The water looks horrible." And she happened to be in town yesterday down in Georgetown for business and came up for lunch, and we had a drink at Clyde's. And she was just in awe at the disgrace that this place, what it looks like now compared to what it looked like 15 years ago. And she was just, couldn't believe it.
Well, I agree. And most of what I see is around the lakes, and I mean all the lakes. They keep Centennial, of course, that's Ellicott City.
Yeah, Howard County, right.
Howard County. Uh-huh. They keep that a lot nicer than CA keeps any of the other lakes. And another pet peeve of mine is there are a couple of people on Wild Lake who have determined how CA spends money cutting down the growth on the island that's formed there because they want to preserve their view of the lake. Well, guess what? That's open space. That's public view. And CA has kowtowed too long to the few complainers that we have, and they haven't listened to the positive aspects of what's happened with our environment here.
Well, what do you think? They have a new watershed manager. You heard about this?
I wrote to Mr. McCoy.
John McCoy.
And I received an email back from him this morning, and it was a very positive email. Personally, I think the way they're dredging the lakes is absolutely backwards.
Well, of course, that started before he came on board.
Right. In all fairness to him, that's true.
But that's how CA does things.
They are spending $5.3 million to dredge Kittamakundi, before they dredge Wild Lake. Wild Lake is a forebay for Kittamakundi.
Yeah, the water drains into here.
Right.
Yeah.
Wild Lake should be dredged first. If someone could explain the logic between what they're doing, I'd like to know.
It's politics.
It's politics because this is town center, and you know this is what the everybody focuses on. But you know it's interesting the watershed guy, and I've actually had Bob Tenenbaum point this out to me, or somebody else that was in the early days of planning Columbia, that these lakes today would never be allowed to be built. You know, as McCoy pointed out, that Columbia was started before stormwater management techniques were developed, and the prevailing theory for controlling runoff was primitive and simple back then. So,
correct.
Yeah, you know, we've kind of created the problems that we have today because we didn't know what we were doing back then.
Right.
So, Michael, we're running out of time here, but just real quick before we let you go, birds seem to have, I think I'm going to try to get one fact correct today. So, birds seem to be something that you like taking pictures of.
Actually, I don't. And the...
And then there's that.
The fact is,
let me just put it out right now. We're going to be looking for a new co-host for Dennis.
The fact is that birds tend to present themselves more than other wildlife to my camera. No, I do love taking pictures of birds, but I want to get it straight right now. I am not a birder. I don't own a $2,000 Swarovski spotting scope. I love the wildlife here in Columbia. I have photographed 84 species of birds at Wild Lake alone.
Wow.
I know that not from writing it in my birder notebook, which I don't keep, but just from my hard drive and the photos
right.
that I keep.
Right. You know, you say, I've taken some pictures of, you know, occasionally I'll see a picture of a heron, and they seem to actually like having their picture taken.
The great blue herons love to have their photos taken. As a matter of fact, there's a great blue heron photo booth at Elkhorn that very few people know about.
Really?
You can pose with a great blue heron.
A photo booth?
Yep, 25 cents. Still 25 cents.
Paul actually, he'll share with you some. Paul went down to the Galapagos Islands not too long ago, and he took a picture of a blue-footed
booby. But yeah. I don't like taking pictures of birds either.
was that Janis Joplin you're talking about?
And on that note, Michael, thank you very much for coming out and joining us today.
My pleasure.
And good luck with your book that you're writing on, and we look forward. Maybe when the book comes out, we'll have you back on. We'll talk about your book.
Also, I would like to invite everyone to my first museum exhibition, which opens in January at the Ratner Museum in Bethesda.
Great. Congratulations.
Thank
awesome.
You. Yeah, well,
thank
okay.
you. Thank you, Michael.
Earlier today, we spotted Tom Cole, who writes the local blog Hoco Rising, and thought it was very appropriate because Tom had, we quoted him earlier when we did the news segment about Senator Ben Cardin endorsing Dennis Schrader, a Democrat endorsing a Republican in the local race.
And as opposed to all the other Republicans that are not endorsing right. Dennis Schrader.
So we thought it was great.
I shouldn't say all of them, but some of them.
Right. So we've invited him to come on for our 2 minutes, and there's lots of things that we kind of like to explore with you, Tom. One is the whole kind of thing of a lefty voice and speaking. So 2 minutes. Welcome.
Well, I really appreciate you having me on. Many of my Republican friends would tell you that I am the lefty voice.
because I've heard that.
As you'll see, I mean, I've got the Human Rights Campaign sticker on my site. I don't think the lefty-righty blog explanation really works in Howard County, mostly because we're talking about whether or not you put a wind tower on next to your building or whether or not your door is painted blue, and that is not Republican-Democrat talk.
What about monkeys?
You know what? I saw that article about monkeys. I didn't read it yet, but I can't wait to listen to the rest of this podcast to hear what you guys have to say about
the monkeys. Oh, you're going to hear all
about it. But I do try to explain the right point of view to the extent that I know it, because I have a lot of friends that are, you know, the extreme of what Republicans are in this county. And at the same time, I do have conservative viewpoints. I do respect conservative politicians. A lot of our Howard County Republicans are some of the best in the state, partly because of the fact that they're moderated a little bit by the left in Howard County, and the fact that even in Howard County, we don't go that far left. The leftist guy you'll see is still...
Have you met Liz Bobo?
Well, Dennis, I'd love to talk about your love affair with Liz Bobo, but
Dennis would love to talk to Liz Bobo about his love affair. We can't get her on the
show. We can't get her on the show. But so, I mean, as far as left and right, I think that we do have balance out there. And that, as I said on my site, I think if we had a lefty blogger, that we would probably be too far to the left.
You know, it's interesting. At the end of the day, you know what? You got people to the left. You got people to the right. But at the end of the day, it's about a good community. It's about a vibrant business community. It's about economic development. And I think where we run into issues is just the little nitty-gritty things about which really take priority. You know, how much do we raise taxes for social programs, and how much is that at the expense of economic development? I think that's where we run into issues. But you're right. I think we have a fairly balanced community, although, you know, being the conservative guy at the table, I'd like to see it more conservative.
Well, I hear you there. I think that also there's a lot of team sport going on as far as, you know, I'm a Democrat as long as you're a Democrat and we're all in this together, whereas if you're a Republican, I'm not going to listen too much to what your ideas are because you got a R at the end of your name. And that's another thing that I think both Dennis and I try to do and what we write about is say, listen, there is an R at the end of the name, and you're going to see that on the ballot. But if you ignore them because of that, then you're doing everyone a disservice.
Well, and if you listen to the show, you'll know that Dennis and I have been on opposite sides of issues. And we don't always agree with the Republicans. We don't always agree with the Democrats. You know what? We're issue-based people. So anyway, hey, listen, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, appreciate it.
Yeah, keep up the blog. You're doing a great job.
Thanks, Dennis.
So enjoy reading it. Thanks. Okay.
That about wraps up another episode of Then There's That. On behalf of myself and my co-host, Paul Scalney, we'd like to thank our producer, Dave Bittner, for making us look good on radio, and to Paul Kraft and Clyde's Restaurant for hosting our show again today. For our next show, we'll be doing a special podcast from the 65th Annual Howard County Fair in West Friendship. Our logistics team is still ironing out all the details, so check in with our Facebook page to get the latest info. We hope you'll join us.